Good afternoon. Wonderful preceding talks. I don't really need to say a whole lot about many of the aspects of concussion and mild traumatic brain injury after our wonderful presenters. My presentation is going to be focused more on pragmatic aspects and everyday clinical work and knowledge translation, really getting a lot of the information that my colleagues before spoke about into the hands of clinicians who see children every day, nurses, doctors, patients, their families, schools. How do we practically do this? And I'm going to talk mostly about current practice in emergency department concussion care. Some of the work was referred to here, and evidence-based medicine for concussion screening and management, including return to play and activity guidelines, and some innovative health IT models for knowledge translation, and translation of gold standards, some of the standards that were derived here supported by the CDC, by the Maternal Child Health Bureau, by HRSA, into practice every day for pediatric concussion care. And some of the work that I'm discussing here has been funded by the Maternal Child Health Bureau, HRSA, HHS, and the CDC, and Children's National Health System, which is the hospital where I work. This is our hospital in Washington, D.C. I want to tell you a little bit about the emergency department where I am. We see about 130,000 children in our emergency department annually. The majority of these children are underserved, and we also see children from all over the world. We went live with an electronic health record in 2008, and for those of you who know, electronic health records are in use in now many hospitals in the United States, however, primarily still used for word processing and ordering of tests. Not really used for clinical decision support, not really integrated with care, and don't involve any patient decision making really in the process at all. And in the emergency department, a lot of people say, why emergency departments and public health? So I have an MPH and I wanted to do emergency medicine and pediatrics, and it's really a focal place where we do see a lot of children with concussion, and especially sports concussion. So, a young person will be in a sports game, a football game, and receive a concussion. Now, over 43 of our states have returned to play guidelines and also, removal from play guidelines. So if in doubt, sit it out. The problem is these children are getting seen or sent or referred to their primary care physician often, or go directly to an emergency department. What's happening in the emergency department setting is what we sought to find out and what we can do to improve this care. I'm going to tell you a little bit more about the story as we move on. And the focus was on concussion in our work. We've been doing this work since the late 1990s. I know I look younger than that. really focusing on this because of the patients that we saw. And I'll tell you a little bit about the costs around the current care for concussion that we're providing to young people. The costs are very high. And part of our Hippocratic Oath as physicians is first to do no harm, primum non nocere. And we're not practicing this way today in this country around concussion. And there really is a concussion crisis that needs to be addressed for youth, and especially around sports. So I'm going to talk a little bit about the epidemiology of concussion as it reflects on emergency department care. Dr. Satcher did a wonderful job on speaking to sports concussion. I'm going to be a little bit more broad because he spoke about sports concussion, and we have a broader picture of what sports concussion really is. It's not only youth playing on sports team. There's a five-year-old in the playground who falls off the monkey bars or off the swing or off a slide. And we're seeing, this impact very early on as well. There are children in, peewee sports, in junior sports, who aren't on, teams per se. They're more recreational. And a lot of these young people are also getting injured. So it's important to recognize this along the spectrum from early childhood through adulthood. And we talk about numbers for head injury, and we're estimating there are about at least 5 million children with head injuries in this country annually, and that's youth under 19 years of age, so up to adulthood. Why do the numbers reflect it? Why are they so much lower? You know, the numbers that we see about concussion, even sports concussion, why are the numbers so much lower? What we found is that we are not screening for concussion. In studies that we did, again funded by the CDC, 0% of emergency departments were screening youth for concussion. What we're doing is we'll have a young person in a sports injury, basketball injury, cheerleading injury, fall, you know, from a significant height, have a loss of consciousness. They're flown in with a helicopter to the hospital, and we're getting CT scans of the head, neck, chest, belly, abdomen, and pelvis, and all of these are negative in the majority of cases, in the overwhelming majority of cases, and we're sending them home with a diagnosis of strain or sprain after an injury. And that's the practice, and I'll tell you a little bit more about why we know this. It's shocking, but this is what's happening every day. 90% of children in this country are not seen in pediatric emergency medicine, you know, departments. They're seen in general hospitals where, you know, adult emergency department caregivers are taking care of them and not focused on youth at all. There are about 600,000 emergency department visits. Again, this is estimated for traumatic brain injury. That is really the tip of the iceberg because we're not screening. We're not putting down the diagnosis of concussion ever in a chart. I've reviewed, you know, thousands and thousands of medical records, and, you know, clear concussion by symptoms, by signs, nowhere on the chart is there any screening or diagnosis of concussion. And this is all retrospective. You know, you go back and look at this. Our emphasis today in this country in emergency care is on the decision for cranial CT, you know, head CT scan. So head CT scans are great when you need them. So this is a patient with severe brain injury, has a big bleed in the head, midline shift, you know, really sick. We know what to do with this patient. Or a patient with a blade in the head. You know, we know what to do with this patient. If you're on Grey's Anatomy, one of those TV shows, you know, someone will go pull it out and resuscitate them and fix them up, and it's all done. And since the 1970s, CT scan has been around. It's a great tool because it can diagnose this. The overwhelming majority of traumatic brain injury is not this. It's not severe traumatic brain injury. The overwhelming majority of cases, especially in children and in sports concussion, is mild TBI or concussion. And what we're seeing is up to 95 to 97% of traumatic brain injury in youth is actually mild, or they're actually concussed. So the question isn't what to do with the severe or even moderate traumatic brain injury. It's what to do with the mild TBI, what to do with the youth 15-year-old who's playing on the soccer field or the football field, and head-to-head impact with another young person, athlete, and has a brief loss of consciousness. What do we do? How do we manage them? The first question I get from these young people is, you know, can I play in the game on Saturday? You know, can I play? Here they are, they're flown in with a helicopter. The young man is throwing up everywhere. He can't remember who he is. He keeps repeating, is my name Johnny? Is my name Johnny? You're like, what are you talking about? Just so obviously affected. But the first thing they want to know is, can they play in the game on Saturday? So really important to consider, you know, how we're managing them. And then also very important is, when can they go back to school? You know, how is this going to affect them? How is it going to affect their careers? How is it going to affect their lives? The other end of the spectrum is a five-year-old who falls off the swings and maybe has multiple episodes of vomiting. You know, how do we manage this young person? How do we restrict their activity? We can't tell them not to go back to sport. And what effect is this going to have on them, on their future? So I mentioned that we've been live with an electronic health record since 2009 and 2008, and it was also very interesting that, you know, at the same time we've noticed a really dramatic growth in the mobile technology and smartphones. So we did a survey in our emergency department waiting room. I said, you know, the majority of our patients are coming from underserved communities, and 80% of the families and the children actually had smartphones. So trying to think of ways to incorporate, you know, the tools that we've been able to develop, and also develop tools that are important into everyday lives of these patients. We have paper patient education that we hand out to our patients, and in one of our studies, for example, found that 0% of children diagnosed with a concussion, with these great screening tools that we've been able to develop, when they take these tools back to the school, we're not seeing the communication with the school, but 0% of them followed up with their primary care physician or a specialist when we recommended it with these paper tools. So we really need to integrate this, and this was underserved youth. It was slightly better for children from a higher SES status. And so what we are focusing on here in the work is really looking at the emergency department as a point of entry into the system. Because if you come to an emergency department after getting pulled off a field, a playing field after a sports concussion, which is great, right? We're recognizing this. And you come to an emergency department today and you're not screened for a concussion, and you get these management recommendations that are very inadequate. We actually found that about 87% of the emergency departments felt their management instructions were very inadequate. My colleague Bob Cantu did wonderful work many decades ago and brought recognition to sports concussion and really, you know, talked about if you have LOC for a minute, this is how long you have to sit out from play. If you have LOC, loss of consciousness, for 5 minutes, you have to sit out a little bit longer. It was wonderful work at the time because it was the first time that we were recognizing concussion in youth and talking about some kind of rest, but not really relevant today. So what we want to do is really focus in the acute care setting, in the hospital setting. Eventually we want to start at the pre-hospital setting, and even at the time of injury, but really we're focused on the hospital setting to increase screening and recognition of concussion, to automate processes. So in the triage, when you come to the emergency department, the nurse asks you a question, head trauma, they start concussion screening for you. They start to risk stratify you to see if you need a CAT scan or not, and then really be able to take this using mobile technologies and direct communication through email with your school nurse, with your primary care physician. This child has a concussion. They need to sit out from the classroom. Don't give them standardized tests this week or this month or until they're symptomatic. And symptomatic, we're not just talking about symptomatic at rest. You have to be symptomatic at exertion, too. The other interesting thing that we found, and colleagues at the CDC and NIH and different studies, is that you don't get all your symptoms at once. We're under this false impression that you get all your symptoms at once. If you don't have them, you're not concussed. What we're finding is actually longitudinally, folks are getting a lot of the symptoms as time progresses, especially in youth. We're seeing a lot of effects on the amygdala, which is, you know, there's some disinhibition. We're seeing increased aggression, violence, depression, suicide. In our area in the last 4 years, we've had 2 cases of youth who committed suicide very within a month post-concussion, you know, poorly recognized and poorly managed concussion. Acutely became depressed, severe behavior change, and suicide within a month. You know, so we really want to impact there and, you know, take it to also the area of preventing secondary injury, preventing not only chronic traumatic encephalopathy, but also the other things that we talked about, recurring injury, preventing basically, you know, depression, chronic problems in school. It's interesting, several studies have looked at youth in prisons, and about 50% of youth in prisons have had some kind of preceding TBI. You know, which came first, the chicken or the egg, is an interesting story, but we do see disinhibition, we see aggressiveness, we see irritability, we see behavior change, we see problems with school performance. A lot of these youth are getting pulled out of classrooms for issues, problems with school performance and behavior and aggression. And we don't know where they're going. Instead of them going to, you know, the to prison or, you know, having problems like that or getting removed from school and expelled from school, we'd love to see them integrated and really want to do this from the emergency department. I mentioned that concussion is the most common type of head trauma, and post-concussive syndrome, you know, we thought that the majority of concussion resolves in 2 weeks. I think a lot of this is erroneous. Several studies have showed this. We did some work with Strong Memorial Hospital about a decade ago, and others have done similar work, that what we're seeing is up to 50% of cases of concussion can actually go on to have post-concussive symptomatology. Part of it was we weren't capturing, we weren't following, and we were saying, hey, if you don't have symptoms within 2 weeks, that's it. What we're seeing is we're seeing some of these symptoms evolving at a month. You know, headache is actually the most common symptom. It usually occurs immediately and, or within 1 or 2 days. And it does stay. It's also the last to resolve. The range is acute and it can occur and continue up to 2 years post blunt head trauma. But there are many other symptoms that develop later. So sometimes as the headache resolves, youth start to get depression, anxiety, irritability. Insomnia is actually a really common problem post-concussion. So we really don't know the magnitude of this work, and that's what the IOM report, this problem, and that's what the IOM report is also referring to. So the concussion research that was funded by the CDC in 2009, we did with colleagues at the University of Pittsburgh. This is just the title of the grant. The publication, the first publication was in Pediatrics this year. Our goals were to really look at current ED practice. So our gestalt or feeling was that nobody is screening for concussion. Nobody's managing. My own colleagues, and I'm pretty obsessed about this, I talk about it everywhere I go, in the United States, at work, all around the world, my own colleagues weren't diagnosing concussion. They weren't screening youth. They were using the strains and sprains post an accident, discharge, and really didn't believe in it. They were kind of not really wedded to this. They didn't believe this was an issue. And the professional athletes, say that the best thing they brought to youth, from this awful problem that they've had with depression and chronic traumatic encephalopathy, some of the things Dr. Satcher talked about is recognition of this important problem. And I'll tell you, it's absolutely true. Doctors still today, clinicians, do not believe in concussion. They're like, kids are making it up, or, and the first question they ask us is, when can I return to sport, these youth who are athletes. The other goal was to create effective diagnostic tools for the emergency department, because we didn't have any. 0% of EDs were screening for concussion, is what we found, and create patient education for the outpatient setting, and be able to really meaningfully communicate to schools and primary care physicians, because as I mentioned, we're not doing that with these paper forms. So a way to automate a communication with the school and the primary care physician, and then to decrease chronic symptoms and effects. What we found is that there's very poor use among emergency physicians of tools for screening and follow-up of children with concussion. About 82% thought that their tools were horrible, and I looked at the tools. We reviewed them all. They were some unusual recommendations, and a lot of the recommendations came from that, initial work I mentioned Bob Cantu did, talking about the minutes of loss of consciousness that you'd have, and that extrapolated into an absolute rest or no play. And it was only around play. That was the only recommendation. And then we wanted to create ED implementation of validated tools for diagnosis and management of the childhood concussion and decrease practice pattern variation. What do you think the practice pattern variation was in my emergency department, where I told you I'm obsessed about this, and we're all pediatric emergency physicians, academicians from big children's hospitals across the United States? What do you think my variation was in how we managed, how many CT scans, let's say, we got in kids for TBI, for mild TBI, for concussion? How many times? So we had a 10-fold variation in practice in my emergency department. And around the country, people are using CT scan up to 70% of the time to diagnose concussion and manage concussion. And that's really high. Pediatric emergency departments do a little bit better. We're up to about 4 to 40%. We have about a 30% rate of CT scan. And then we wanted to disseminate information, as I mentioned, to primary care physicians and school nurses. So we created the acute concussion evaluation for the emergency department. It's very pragmatic. I love it. You talked about it. It's a previously psychometrically validated tool based on that. we defined injury characteristics, and modified it for the emergency department, so it's shorter for ED physicians. And we used experts around the country we used a Delphi process and brought their opinions in, what would make sense practically for their practice, and identified risk factors for recovery, like preceding amnesia or migraine, and then established the diagnosis and came up with what the piece that I love the most is a follow-up action and referral. So the key is really rest and managed exertion, physical and cognitive. So basically, we talk about a graduated return to play and sport. And if you go back and you have exertion, so there's really no absolute recommendation. If you go back and you have exertion and you get symptomatic again, the recommendation is then to sit out. And we recommend, you know, the schools give them a shortened day, shortened classes, no standardized testing. But we want them to return to school. We want them to return to play. As Dr. Satcher mentioned, both of those are really important. And so we've automated these processes in our electronic health record. They start at the time of screening. And it automates, if you meet the criteria for concussion, it pushes out a brain icon on the tracking board. It starts at nursing triage, and the physician completes it. And it gives the team an idea that, hey, you should give out the concussion care plan to this family. And I think my time is up, but I wanted to spend 2 minutes on talking about minor blunt head trauma briefly. The CT scan methodology, you know, I said we should be practicing first do no harm. That we're practicing, the charge for a CT scan is about $3,000, and a single CT of the head in the first 22 years of life increases your lifetime cancer risk threefold. That's 300%. This is from real data from the National Health Service and the NCI, from real patients under 22 who were scanned, and the lethal malignancy risk can be as high as 1 in 1,200. This is how we're practicing concussion care in emergency departments in the United States today. Briefly, you know, what we've done is, I'm showing you this picture not to show you me, but we've known about this and there's been public interest about these issues around CT scan and the dangers since 2001. I mean, this is from CBS News, Newsweek, The Washington Post, you know, 2001, 2002, and we continue to practice this way, not just, you know, academicians, everybody, we're practicing this way. This really needs to be changed. This model needs to be changed, and the time is now. And we need to translate. And what we've done is created a validated decision rule and for decreasing unnecessary CT scans for children with concussion. We put it into the electronic health record. And within 2 months of implementing this tool in our electronic health record, we were able to decrease CT scan rates by 30%. So if you have about 325,000 scans a year and you reduce by 30%, several hundreds of millions of dollars of reduction in charges from CT scan and the wonderful decrease in radiation risk. So I want to challenge everybody here today in the room and interested in public health and the health of children to really address the concussion crisis here. We're seeing millions and millions of children and youth in emergency departments as a starting point, really to engage them, engage their families, engage physicians, and harness health IT, mobile health solutions, to really bring the best concussion care for children to our patients and communities. Thank you.